Brian Johnson, ladies and gentlemen. Look at him appear out of nowhere. Hey, Sarah, now you need to do the same thing.
Okay.
No.
Nope. She's not going to do it.
Sarah
She's
said
like,
no.
I'm done. I'm just here with this.
No, you're more than just here. Hey, welcome to the Kansas City Underground podcast.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. So we are in a series within a series, as we do. We've been exploring these 15 observations in urban disciple-making movements. And today we are beginning to go deeper in this last observation we did last week, which was ongoing coaching, just to put it very succinctly. So in the past, as we've introduced one of these 15 observations, we've usually done two or maybe three episodes. This one, we're going to do five.
Ooh.
Because that's how important we believe coaching is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's how important we believe Sarah Jackway is as well.
That's right. That's why we started with Sarah.
That's right.
So, I feel like we're putting a lot of pressure on her.
I feel like she doesn't believe us either.
No pressure. No pressure at all. That's like why you have five of these, so that way you get a variety of perspectives, and it's not all on one person.
Totally. And if it's a total mess, then this episode didn't even happen. We can just have those other four come on.
You just cut it.
So yeah, there's legitimately no pressure. But to reiterate what my friend Brian was saying, it's like if we see any ongoing sustainable fruit in a movement like Kansas City Underground, then coaching has got to be such a significant backbone of everything. And we realized that pretty quickly. We also realized that the variety of ways that we coach.
Right.
You know, and so it's like there's a lot of what I sit in is we call it startup coaching, but it's like the getting people going early on phase, finding people, helping them see their missional context, helping them walk early on, and just some simple rhythms of prayer and mission living and finding persons of peace and discovery Bible study. But as those things emerge over time, I get really kind of bored. You know what I mean? Like, you know, just like people like myself, kind of more like the apostolic pioneer type of role. And then, but the vast majority of ongoing fruit in this network comes from people like Sarah, who are regularly meeting and coaching with people, kind of that part shepherding, part troubleshooting, part, I don't know, walking life with thing. And so Sarah, that's why that's really, we're just going to lean on just some of your experiences and things that you've learned and things that you do. So no pressure.
Yeah. Like I said in the text, we're just having a conversation. Also, Sarah has a 3-year-old at home. And so if she has to bail out for a minute, Corey and I will do our light banter until Sarah comes back. All right. So let's open with this, Sarah. Maybe just a little background about you. What have you done in the past? How are you qualified as a coach? Qualified is probably not the best
That's
word.
The worst word ever.
You've done different
kinds.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so I first kind of started more interest in this world through counseling. So I got my master's in counseling, and after I graduated from grad school, did some counseling with families, specifically with high schoolers at a residential boarding school. But in that setting, just really realized like how much like the whole family unit has to be involved in creating those healthy spaces. And so that was really just like my passion is how can I help and care for people and helping them become fully alive in Jesus and what Jesus has called them to and their purpose and in their passions in life. And sometimes that's going backwards into their past and their history to help them move forward in their present. And so that's really what I focused on in counseling. And then my husband and I started a church campus back in 2013. And in that setting, I led our guest services team. I also led a small group, but I was specifically over our guest services. And so there's this part of me that just always really cared about how are people being cared for from those kind of earliest first interaction settings to more deeper, meaningful relational connections. And then during that time, I also joined a church planting organization and helped walk with leaders who are considering starting churches through a discovery process, assessment process. And then I also helped to coordinate some of their trainings as they prepared to start a new church. So I did that for probably about 7 years. And then in 2020, we moved back to Kansas City from Chicago. We were in the Chicago suburbs at a church plant for a few years. And 2020 was COVID, as we all know. And so since we moved back to Kansas City to join a church plant during COVID, how we were gathering was different. It was not in the school that they previously gathered in. And so it was in 2021 that we really began to pray about what is God calling our church to be in this season. And I think COVID really allowed those opportunities for us to see, like, our heart was always about our neighborhood, about our context, about these spaces outside of a Sunday gathering. And mm-hmm. so it was during that time that we began to transition our church to a hub of the Kansas City Underground. And so as we prayed about what that would look like, we went through the KCU hub cohort, which was super helpful. And during that time, that's when I started to think about, okay, if my role is in part of our hub cohort, our hub leadership, what would that look like? And that's when I sort of naturally was drawn towards coaching and discovery, part of my counseling background, but also because Corey said, I'm not wired as an apostle. And so I like walking with people through longer seasons. And so my gifting is more shepherding. My voice order is more nurture forward. And so this coaching role, walking with people, helping them discover their next steps and listen to God and what he's calling them to do, and also integrating their story, really seemed to just fit my passion and part of how God has wired me.
Man, well done.
I know, man.
That was really good. And I would say maybe overqualified might be the right word.
I was like, she should be interviewing us maybe. Like, what are you doing wrong?
Yes. Wow. No, seriously, Sarah, that was awesome. A great summary. And also just, I mean, I think you teed up a lot of what this conversation is going to be today of what, yeah, I got a question. Maybe I'll throw this question out unless, Brian, you had a specific starting point.
No, I've got four or five that I sent Sarah. So whatever you're asking her is going to be.
Well, how about this? Let's go with what you had. So I'm not throwing a curveball, and then I'll come in the eighth inning and throw that curveball. So
that's fair. I'm so excited about baseball right now. Just watching the break. Anyway, you know, you're doing a couple of different things, like maybe a little bit more on, like, what specifically were you doing when you talk about, let me start over. I love the line that you said that the whole family unit has to be involved for the sake of health when you were doing those mm-hmm. early counseling days. And I was like, man, what did you do when you were with Stadia? Sarah and I also get to work together with new things, so we get to coach leaders mm-hmm. still through cohorts. Like, what of that kind of counseling world informs the way that you coach people? Mm-hmm. Whether that was church planners with Stadia and thinking about what they're going to do. Like, I don't know if you can go a little bit on that. Like,
Yeah. So I think for me, because I realized how much our family environments impact who we are, how we function, how we operate and see the world. When I work with leaders, whether that's just in a vocational capacity with Stadio or with New Thing, or just spending time with people, I'm always thinking about what part of their story is taking place in their current experience. And so a lot of times, you know, with leaders in Stadia or with New Thing, you're not working with their entire family unit. You're not working with their kids or their parents or grandparents or whoever it was that really shaped them, but you can help them gain greater awareness into their story. And then that might be the whole journey, but I think it's just trying to ask some of those questions and listen to, hey, what are they sharing? Is there anything that's connected to their family experience? Anything that's connected to their upbringing? Is that a question, or are you just
I was waiting on Sarah to go. I see that question. You can ask that now.
Yeah.
I want to go deeper on that bit that you just answered there to maybe open up a bit about how you do the listening piece. Like I want these podcasts with the different coaches to sort of open up like practical steps to not just like theoretically we should coach people. Like Corey just doesn't listen to me ever. What? So like how do you actively listen? What are you listening for? Like what are the skills that you employ in that?
I feel like that preface to that question was unneeded, but yes, go ahead, Sarah.
So Corey, this answer's for you, apparently.
Thank you. Yes, I'm listening. I'm taking notes.
One, I think, again, as we talked about, like no pressure as we start this podcast, I think there is like, we get the opportunity to partner with the Holy Spirit. And so like, there is this part that's like, it isn't all on us. Like we have a partner in the Holy Spirit who knows all of their story, who knows everything about this person and knows where they need to go. And we don't always know where they need to go. Right. So like, it's not this piece of, oh, I'm listening so I can get them to this place, 'cause this is what I think. Like there is this huge dependency on the Holy Spirit to try and discern things that we can't just in our own strength. Now, more specifically, I would say part of listening is over time, just listening to notice themes. So sometimes it's asking questions, but a lot of times it's first just doing a lot of listening to notice themes. And as you spend more and more time with people, you might notice similar things pop up. So you might notice similar themes about fear related to something. Or maybe it's not fear. Maybe it's more of criticism. You know, you notice, oh, they seem to be more critical of these types of experiences. So I think that's what's helpful for me is just listening and noticing, are there any themes that I am experiencing when I'm with this person that I notice about them? And then asking the Holy Spirit for wisdom. Okay, God, like, what do you want to speak into this person about that theme? And then it's just trying to ask some questions and just saying, maybe it's saying, hey, I notice when you're having conversations with your coworker, you kind of get to this point and then you back off. Like, how are you feeling when you're having those conversations? What's coming up when you're talking to them? And then as they share, again, just continuing to listen to see, like, why is it that they're feeling that way? Is it because of something in their own experience that's leading them to feel a certain way? Did they have a negative experience that they're maybe nervous about putting on someone else? Or is it more of a confidence thing that it's like, hey, I don't know if I feel confident in doing this, I'm not sure what to say. Or maybe they've tried this before and they've had a bad experience and someone was really critical and with them and it didn't go well. So now they're just nervous to engage in that same way. It could be a variety of things and we don't always know. So I think that's where just like listening and asking questions helps us to try and get a better understanding of where the person is at, what might be playing a part in their history, in how they're behaving in a way. I don't like the word behaving, but and just how they're navigating things in this moment. It often comes from someplace in their history.
Yeah. Okay. So in my mental picture, in my mind, I'm thinking.
That's where your mental picture
is. My mental picture is my mind, and it's crazy. It's so confusing. No. So I'm like journeying down this like road, you know, and like I feel like the coaching, like you're asking a question and we start to walk down a road. And then I think so often, you know, we get to, oh, I don't know, but a path, a door or something where it's like, I think, you know, that's where you would say, hey, I recognize, okay, fear. Let's say you're saying, like, I recognize fear. I think maybe the assumption with a lot of people is, okay, now I will immediately give you the answers of how to not be fearful, or this is what to do to sidestep fear, or whatever it is. Like, that's probably my default. It's like, okay, I asked that first question. We got to the real issue. Now let me fix this crap. And it seems like what you're saying is good coaching would be you get to that door, and the way to unearth more of that, to open that door, is to ask another question. So we recognize it. I see this. Tell me how you're feeling in this. Tell me what your thought process is. You open that door, and then you're like deeper into this next path of further discovery, further, you know, discovery from Jesus and the Holy Spirit. So that's super helpful to me, because I do think I'm decent at asking questions in the front end. I think I too quickly try to get to giving answers. And so that's just really, I know we were joking before that me taking notes, but that is actually very personally significant. And because I'm in a lot of coaching relationships, but I do at some point in the conversation start to talk too much most of the time.
Turn it into a question. How do you stop yourself from doing that?
How do I stop myself from doing that, Sarah?
How do you think you stop yourself from doing that, Corey? I mean, I think one, Corey, I just want to say, I think that's something most of us struggle with, right? Like and I struggle with that too, even though I know these things, there's times that if you care about people and you're passionate about helping them and you think you have an answer for them, we naturally want to give that answer out of the goodness of our heart. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of people, when we're on the flip side of that, if we're experiencing that, we don't feel like it's helping. We feel like it's that unsolicited advice, or that, oh, I'm smarter than you and I'm going to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Even when those aren't our intentions, that's often how it can be received. And I think just in our world today, like, we have a lot of people who are giving unsolicited advice. So it just tends to come across that way a lot more. And so I think that's where it is, that piece of, even if we think we have something helpful, asking a lot of questions to get to that place to where, if you're like, hey, I've been through something similar, or I know someone who's been through something similar and this has been helpful, then just even saying that, like, hey, you know, I've had a similar experience. Would it be okay to share part of my story? And you're asking permission to share something that you have, rather than just giving it in a way that's like, hey, this is helpful for you, you need to take it. You're giving them permission to kind of give more of that wisdom or advice.
That's good.
Yeah, I was going to do a follow-up question, and then you answered it, which was like, can you ever do that? Can you teach? Can you, you know, maybe we could explore, I don't know, but just like, it feels like there's different phases to coaching, right? Like, sometimes there is, like, we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes if you're thinking of the sports analogy, there's a certain amount of, like, you don't know how to swing a bat or stand next to the plate. But, like, further on, you know, there is more of a, what's going on in your body right now? Why you went from I'm going to keep using the baseball analogy. Yeah. You went from 333 to 187 on your batting average. Like, what changed? What's different? But early on, there is some directive. And I think usually in the middle, there's a little bit more of, I know in my own, like, counseling work, my guide is often using this phrase, hey, are you open to some feedback? Mm-hmm. And, like, just that question is like, I have the freedom to go, no, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I'm like, yeah, I've kind of been waiting for you to tell me the answer here, and buddy. Fix it. But just like, there is a place for empathy to be like, when I'm sharing that story, I'm trying to empathize and give you something that I think is resonating with that problem. So I do think it is helpful. I don't know, any other maybe feedback of something that sparked for you?
Yeah, I think, and again, this is where, like, the relationship is so important. And we do need a lot of empathy, like, when we're working with people, and just in relationships, like, any relationship, we need empathy, not even just like in coaching relationships. But I think this is where, like, knowing the person, because some people don't respond well to redirection or challenge. And so you really have to spend time with that person to know, okay, where are they at? How do they respond to challenge? Do they lean in or do they back farther away? And if they're backing farther away, then I have to figure out a different approach to try and help support them. Mm-hmm. One thing that's really helpful too, Brian, I love what you said of like just asking that question, like, Kate, are you open to feedback? Like you're asking them and then they're giving you permission to bring in more. What's also really helpful is paying attention to people's body language. Because a lot of times we have body language that we're not always aware of. And so what's going on inside often presents itself outside. So even paying attention in those times to their body language, like, are they leaning back? Are they starting to like wander their eyes or just kind of like, are their eyes glazing over? Especially when you're giving feedback or trying to share, teach, because that can start to tell you if maybe they're getting checked out. and maybe if they're, you know, we're wandering too far in the conversation, that they're no longer an active participant. And so then just even asking those questions like, hey, what are your thoughts? Even if you're giving feedback, you've said, hey, can I offer some feedback? They say, sure. And then you give it, you can say, what do you think about that? Like, does it resonate? Does it feel like it's connected? Does that not feel true at all? And then again, they're giving you more information to that response, whether they say, yeah, like, I really agree with it. Or if they're like, no, I don't think that's true at all. Then that can help you even see like, okay, where are they at? And if you still really believe that what you observed in your feedback was accurate, maybe there's something else that's still disconnected at that point for them getting to that place of receiving it.
Yeah, that's so good, Sarah. Let's zoom in a little bit in terms of some how this looks like within our network, within your role at Serve. So Serve, one of the hubs in KC Underground, Sarah's the ongoing coaching director there. And so, yeah, you spend a lot of time doing this with everyday leaders, you know, everyday people in their spaces that God's called them in ministry. So kind of a two-part question.
What do you do?
Like, what's the average setting look like as you coach? And then what are some, I don't know, major themes that, like, is it mostly shepherding? Is it mostly tactical? Is it totally in between? You know, like, so that's kind of a two-part question. What does it kind of look like in the Serve world? And then what are some major themes?
This window's too small.
Yeah. So for us, again, we're still a newer hub. So like we're continuing to evolve. And so as we grow and follow God's promptings, coaching is evolving. And so there's a variety of settings that it's looked like. A lot of times we meet in person or on Zoom, and part of that is just dependent on availability, where people are in the city, just the timing. And sometimes it's a combination of both. But we've really had two different types of groups that I've seen coaching with so far. One is for people who are disciple making in their context. That's their neighborhoods, their schools, their gyms, your friend groups. And so a lot of times that coaching starts more of, again, coming out of the missionary pathway. If they've identified their context, we help them identify like who are a few people specifically by name that God is calling you to serve and love and bless in this season. And then it's figuring out, okay, now what's God asking you to do with those people? And having those I will statements. Okay, if God is asking you to bring food to your neighbor or serve your coworker or invite your coworker out to hang out, having that obedience-based step. And then the next month at our coaching group, we check in on that and say, okay, How did that go? What's been happening? And over time, again, this is where you can start to notice themes. You can notice themes of I wills. Like, are their I wills similar? Are they progressing in depth? Are they following through on their I wills? If not, we know we're not perfect. So we don't have there's no shame when we don't follow through. But again, it's just all information to say, like, okay, what's happening? What's going on? Like, is there a significant challenge? Maybe is this the right person? Like, is this a person that God is still calling you to? So just, again, asking more questions. So that's one group. The other one that we're dealing with serve right now is more organizations. So we've had some organizations that have gone through the missionary pathway and now are stepping into ongoing coaching. And so that looks a little different than our other groups because they are really the coaches for their disciple makers. And so that is starting out more strategic. It's more of, hey, how is your coaching process? How are you supporting the people that are the disciple makers in your nonprofit, in your organization, those leaders? What is that looking like? And then I think over time, some of this is newer, so this is just my hypothesis. I think over time, then we'll even get deeper into more of those story pieces. What's their own story and how they're coaching and how they're structuring their coaching for the organization, but then also how are they helping the people within their organization know their story, know their gifting and gift mix. You know, like you shared, Corey, you're more pioneering apostolic. I'm not pioneering apostolic. So what we feel a lean towards is both very different because of our gift mixes. And so how do they help people know their gift mix and know what that looks like then within their ministry? And then also just help them be empowered to live the life that God has called them to live, right? Because we know it's not fun when you're in some sort of volunteer role or any sort of role that doesn't really align with who God has created you to be. And so how can they really steward the people that are volunteering or serving with them in a way that honors their gifting and their calling?
Yeah, that's really good. Like, I just want to throw this out there real quick, Brian, before you ask this question, because my question's better. No, I it's just watching the serve hubs kind of roll within the city. It's been interesting to see that you guys, that's kind of this thing that you guys have started doing really well, is you're finding these other, I used to joke, use that analogy I stole from my friend Phil, is like, we're kind of like ticks on a dog.
Could you just say learned from?
I learned and then stole and then claimed it as my own. Yeah. Is that wrong? Like, sometimes the best way to see movement in the city is not try to gather everything underneath your own organization, but we're just continually push out. And we're like, hey, there are actually a lot of organizations that are deep in the weeds of relationship and real ministry on the ground, that sometimes just a disciple making mindset culture that we can help come alongside is really what they're missing to see some significant multiplication. It's been fun to watch you guys kind of have, like, Morgan's really good at finding those type of people in the city. That's been a little bit of my role in the city too, and I haven't always known what to do. Mm-hmm. But then to be able to plug them, those type of leaders, into ongoing coaching is significant. And I think it's significant because it's not to grow
the
brand of either KC Underground or Serve. It's really pushing out. It's a kingdom thing. I just think that's really cool.
We honor you in that.
Yeah. Sure. Like, it's really cool that you guys do that and you do it well. And I'll just say, you're really good at this. I mean, just to voice that, like, you've got the deep well of knowledge in there that I'm like, man, this is like so practical. So thank you for joining us. I mean, this, seriously, it's good stuff.
Do you have time for like two more questions?
I do.
I'll make them short. You are gifted in a shepherding way, but you're also gifted in a prophetic way. So this will be just a question to invite, like, how does the prophetic, like that component of your gifting, enter into coaching? If you want to answer that one, you can also go, nah, pass. But
yeah. I think I'm still learning more of like the prophetic piece, because I think it's, I think for me, like it's, so my husband, he has a prophetic gift mix, and his is different, I think, than how I'm wired, because he's not wired as a shepherd first, and I am. And so I think for me, it's more about like individual people and helping individual people, or like smaller groups of people. And so I think part of it is just growing in dependency on the Holy Spirit to learn like, okay, what is God inviting this person to do? Mm-hmm. And there's times where like I will get some strong senses that, hey, I think this is going on with someone. And I think that's where like the prophetic piece comes in of like, I'm feeling this kind of direction with someone, or these themes with someone, like I spoke about the themes earlier. And I think this is where like there has to be that reliance on God, because I can sense that, but I'm still human, so I could be wrong. One, two, I think there's a piece of like knowing like, what do I do with this? Like, how do I help? Like, if God is giving me this wisdom, like, it's not for me. It's not for my own, like, feeling all like, oh, look how smart I am. Like, it's for the support of the person. And so trying to learn what do I do with this? How do I present this and walk through this with the person in a way that helps them? Mm-hmm. And I say that because there's times where I've felt those senses, and I've approached it more in the, oh, like I'm thinking these things, and it, and I've asked questions, and it's felt more interrogating than supportive.
Mm.
And so I think there is that balance of like, sometimes if we have a gift of prophecy, of having those like prophetic understandings from God, specifically with people, we can sometimes shift our shepherding to try and better understand what God is speaking in the prophetic, rather than using the prophetic to shepherd the person.
Mm.
And really so good. I think that's where like, then the shepherding feels like it's a weapon, not a support.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, that's a real,
that needs, I feel like that was still somewhat like, no. Really, I'm still processing it, so I don't know if that felt vague.
No.
If you're a shepherd and prophet, it might have made sense to you. If you're not, yeah. I apologize.
Well, I asked the question. Well, one, let me say thanks for being vulnerable to say, I'm not really sure, mm-hmm. but I'll just offer you what I'm currently processing. That to me is more valuable than the answer in a way, because you're modeling a posture. But I have a friend that I'm getting to know who's a counselor in the city, works with pastors mostly. And I made the comment, I was like, oh, I bet you have a strong shepherding gift. He's like, actually, I think the best like therapists, counselors, guides, coaches also have a pretty strong prophetic bent. I was like, well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm, totally.
But short amount of time left. So one last question just to wrap it up with, we'll kind of give you the last word here of, you're a patient person. I've been in a lot of conversations and environments with you where the tension in the room feels like it's rising, and Sarah feels very centered and present. And I was thinking, I wonder how helpful that is as a coach to not feel like you have to solve the situation, mm-hmm. solve the problem, move a person to a specific place. But you're like, eventually this will either get worked out or it won't. I think part of that is your own internal work of like, I'm a whole person and I can't navigate you.
But part of it is you've had a lot of practice probably with Josh, your husband.
Yeah. I hope he hears this. So, yeah, like maybe in your years of experience of counseling and coaching, it could be practical, could be just a mm-hmm. point you're making to encourage other coaches out there, like simply, hey, don't try to move people, just move with them. What would you say to that sort of comment idea?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts going in my head right now. So I'll try and put them together. I think one is what you just said, like, it's not our job to move people, it's the Holy Spirit's. And I think we have to also know our own story. If you're getting into counseling or coaching, what is it that drove you towards that? So for me, I'm still learning. One, like, we're all ongoing learning. So if we ever feel like we're a super strong expert and that we can tell people what to do, there's probably a posture check we need to take a pause in, because we all continue to learn and grow. But I think we need to know our story. So for me, part of what I have learned and I'm continuing to learn is that I do come from more codependent culture and I have codependent tendencies. And I also like peace. On the Enneagram, I'm a 9, wing 1. So, like, I like harmony. And so I like helping to be a peacemaker. Like, I feel like that's something that God has called me to do. And so I also have to realize in those spaces where there are tensions rising or there's, like, things that need to be fixed, am I starting to move towards, like, am I wanting to fix it out of my own codependency? That's not really for them, but it's more about me and, like, how I'm feeling in that moment. And am I being a helper because it fills a void for me, or am I doing it because it truly supports them? And so I think, one, I've done some work. There's always more work to do, but, like, I've done work to learn better coping strategies to where, like, I can stay more calm and can stay grounded, and I figure out, like, what are my triggers, what are the things that push me towards unhealthy patterns, or push me towards, like, codependency, to where then, you know, if someone has a problem, I'm like, I gotta fix it, I gotta help them. And then it's like, okay, I've made this about me, I've not made this about them. Like, I'm mixing my stuff with theirs. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's really helpful for counseling, coaching, anything. Like, anytime that we are entering in other people's story, we have to do our own work to know our story, because we might get to a point to where our stories cross, and then we might start to unintentionally weave our story into their story, mm-hmm. which then really makes it more about our story and not their story. And so, like, we have to continue to have those spaces to process our story, so that way we can truly be helpful and supporting and encouraging and coaching people.
Mm. Just that little bit for all of you out there.
That's sit so with, freaking
sit
good,
with,
man.
Sit with that
so
for
good.
A while.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, Sarah, thanks for spending time with us. This is rich.
Seriously.
Yeah. This is amazing kickoff. So for those of you listening, if you're thinking at all about networks like what we're doing, I hope you tune into these 5 weeks, because they're going to be really important, give you a lot of different angles on coaching. If you're an ordinary person in Kansas City and you're thinking about our network, Sarah's are the type of people that you get to connect with in mm-hmm. ongoing coaching.
And last observation, like, I think that, so what we also help people become coaches, like, by plugging them into, you know, like Sarah and Brie and mm-hmm. others that can help develop coaches, that I think sometimes people think you have to be this, like, crazy extrovert or evangelist or whatever to go and be an everyday missionary in the underground. And I think, although everyone is able to do that, because that's the reality, disciples are disciple makers, that there's also people that are going to be wired probably more in this world, and we need more coaches. Like, we need a lot more coaches in the city to help come alongside people all the time. And you don't have to be a crazy expert. Mm-hmm. That's what's wild. Like, I think the way that you talk about this, Sarah, is like, you don't have to be 6 steps ahead of everyone, have all of your own stories of mass movement and disciple making. You're becoming a listener. You're joining God in the process. You probably need to be a practitioner in some sense, but you don't need to be way ahead. So I think that hopefully that's really encouraging for people. And we need more coaches. So Sarah, thank you. You're awesome. That was really, really good.
All right. See y'all next week. Yeah.